restoration without side effects, right?
No. Nope.
Okay, so you don't know. Doctors of Hair use only clinically proven treatments, from platelet-rich plasma hair therapy that uses your own platelets to stimulate stem cells deep in your hair follicle to halt hair loss and regrow hair, to the FDA-cleared clinical hair restoration laser that's proven to regrow hair, to neograft hair transplants that offer discreet, natural-looking results in a week or less with no linear scarring. All of these services are administered by Doctors of Hair caring medical professionals, experts at understanding how devastating hair loss can be at any age. Treatments work for both men and women wanting a natural, thicker head of hair without side effects.
Doctors of Hair. Call now. 702-751-0086. That's 702-751-0086. Or online at doctorsofhair.com.
Doctors of Hair. Now you know.
Newsmakers, newsbreakers, and everything in between. Live and local with Kevin Wall. Now, weekdays noon to 3 on AM 670 KMZQ. Talk radio done right.
Tomorrow's a big day in Washington. Chuck Grassley and James Comer are going to unveil what they claim is evidence that President Biden is dirty. And in fact, tell you what let's do. Let's see if we can squeeze this in before we go to break. Chuck Grassley is cut two, the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee with Jesse Waters. Here it is.
What can you tell us about this document that we keep hearing about that's so explosive?
Well, it comes from credible whistleblower disclosures, and it is a FBI document, investigatory, that seems to imply that then Vice President Biden was involved in some criminal activity. We've subpoenaed this document. My focus right now is on the FBI and the Department of Justice. What have they done with this document? Did they follow up with it? And the public has a right to know. And it seems to me the FBI ought to get this document to us by no later than the deadline of Wednesday when we set that in the subpoena. It's 5 or 6 pages. It's got a lot of information in it, the details we won't know until we get the document. But right now, my focus, as I say now a second time, is on the FBI doing their job, just like you said about the prosecutor that divulged something within the last week that took place in 2018 or 2019. Did the FBI properly follow up on it? Evidently, he's telling you that it was not followed up, even when he could produce somebody from the Ukraine that would verify it. So this is very crucial to the credibility of the FBI and the confidence of whether or not we're going to have equal justice or whether there's bias in our law enforcement, meaning political bias. In other words, treat Republicans one way and Democrats another way.
You've been a straight shooter with the FBI over the years. Do you have confidence that they're going to comply with your subpoena?
Well, I'll tell you, they aren't just up against Chuck Grassley, a minority member of the United States Senate. In this case, they're up against Congressman Comer, who's a powerful chairman of a committee in the House of Representatives, and between the two of us, we're going to get to the bottom of it, and people ought to know that Chuck Grassley doesn't give up until we do get to the bottom of it.
And, tomorrow we'll know. This time tomorrow we will know if the FBI has complied with the U.S. Senate and the House, which is demanding this document, this 5 or 6 page document that supposedly the FBI is holding on to. Will they cough it up? And what will come of this news conference tomorrow? We'll be talking about that. Coming up, I've got a family 4-pack of tickets to give away to the San Gennaro Feast. It's going to be so much fun. We'll be giving those tickets away sometime in our 2 o'clock hour. Also, we'll be joined by Scott Hammond, State Senator, District 18. It's all straight ahead on AM 670 KMZQ, where news is next.
Of the same old partisan politics, the type that gives Nevada lax voting regulations, reduced educational choice, and bloated, inefficient state government? Feel like you're swimming upstream against a tsunami of special interests and legislators intent on serving the needs of government rather than those of ordinary Nevada residents and businesses? There is hope. I'm John Sarpalis, president of the Nevada Policy Research Institute. And we are working to hold our elected leaders responsible. This isn't a partisan issue. Republicans and Democrats have let down the very people they claim to represent in Carson City. For the good of our children, our parents, and ourselves, let's come together and work to put policy ahead of politics. Go to NevadaPolicy.org and learn what we're doing to stand up for your freedoms. This Nevada Policy Update has been brought to you in partnership with the Nevada Trucking Association.
Live from the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa Studios. From the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, AM 670 KMCQ, Las Vegas. Locally owned and operated by Kemp Broadcasting and Digital Outdoor.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Keith Peters reporting. President Biden is meeting with congressional leaders to try to reach an agreement on raising the debt ceiling. The president and Democrats want the debt limit raised with no conditions. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says Kevin McCarthy and Republicans can quickly end a debt default crisis of their own making.
People have asked, well, will the president give Speaker McCarthy an off-ramp, an exit strategy? The exit strategy is very clear. Do your job. Congress must act. Prevent a default.
But House Majority Leader Steve Scalise tells the Salem Radio Network it should never have come to this.
We shouldn't be here in early to mid-May just starting to wonder what the president's opening bid's going to be. You know, again, over 2 months ago, the speaker and the president sat down to start talking about the debt ceiling, and then the president went into hiding because the president wanted to run out the clock.
The meeting was timed to begin after U.S. financial markets closed for the day. Correspondent Rita Foley reports on the man arrested in Louisiana accused of shooting at children who had been playing hide-and-seek outside his home.
David Doyle told detectives that when he saw shadows outside his home, he got his gun and fired, but didn't know that he hit a 14-year-old girl, say officials. She's expected to recover. Investigators learned that several children were playing hide-and-seek in the neighborhood in Starks, Louisiana, and were hiding on the neighbor's property.
A jury has found Donald Trump liable for battery against Vice columnist E. Jean Carroll in 1996, awarding her $5 million in a judgment that could haunt the former president as he campaigns to regain the White House. The verdict was announced in a federal courtroom in New York City on the first day of jury deliberations. On Wall Street, the Dow down by 56 points, the NASDAQ dropped 77, the S&P 500 lower by 18. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Miss Prager here. Sue and I mean it when we say dogs are part of our family, and there's nothing like their loyal companionship. So we provide them with Rough Greens, R-U-F-F, because we want them to feel healthy and be with us as long as possible. I know Charlie Kirk feels the same way.
The Pragers and I couldn't agree more. I rely on my trusted furry friend, Mr. Briggs, who's an absolute machine, and he relies on me to provide what's best for him. Naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black has packed Rough Greens, not a dog food, but a supplement full of vitamins, minerals, digestive enzymes, and omega oils that Mr. Briggs absolutely needs and loves. Trying Rough Greens for your dog just makes sense.
Greetings, naturopathy Dr. Dennis Black here. I'm honored that the Pragers and Charlie trust their dog's health to Rough Green. I'm so confident that Rough Green can help your dog too that I'm offering you a free Jumpstart trial bag. Just cover the shipping. Yes, dog food is dead food, but it doesn't have to be. Go to RUFF Greens.
Hi, my name is Katrin Ivanov. I escaped from communist Bulgaria to capitalist America. I am urging you to become active in fixing the disastrous direction our country is headed. We need more than just casting your vote or yelling on a Facebook post. My goal is to build a powerful movement by helping you to start actively talking with your neighbors and supporting trusted candidates. There is an old saying that time is money. Donating your time is just as valuable as donating cash. I want to help you find the best use of your time to save this country. On ways to join this movement, please visit MrsFixit.us. That's MrsFixit.us or text me at 702-722-7225. I truly need your help. I can't fix this alone, but together we can fix it. Paid by Friends of Mrs. Fixit.
It's 204. This is your KMZQ Newsflash. I'm Jim Dallas. An 18-year-old man has been charged with 24 felonies in connection with a shooting in a Las Vegas middle school. Jesse Rios is facing 4 counts of attempted murder, 4 counts of discharging a gun in an occupied structure, 1 count of battery with a deadly weapon, and 15 counts of discharging a gun into a prohibited area. Rios is suspected of shooting a security monitor about 12:30 yesterday afternoon at Ed Von Tobel Middle School. The man who was shot was taken to University Medical Center. He is expected to survive. No students were injured in that shooting, but the middle school and 2 nearby elementary schools were locked down for about an hour while police searched for that shooter. Despite losing goaltender Laurent Brossoit to injury in the first period last night, the Golden Knights skated their way to a 5-1 win over the Oilers in Edmonton. Aiden Hill came in cold off the bench and made 25 saves to preserve the win. And the Knights, who lead the best of 7 series 2-1, with Game 4 tomorrow at 7 p.m. That's going to be on ESPN. Partly sunny, look for a high of 85 today. It's 83 degrees right now.
KMCQ on-time traffic is powered by Meineke Car Care Centers. Stop in now for a premium synthetic blend oil change for only $24.95. Meineke, doing car care right.
Several crashes to look out for on the surface streets right now. Decatur at Sirius, Buffalo at Blue Diamond. Also watch for accidents Desert Inn at Orville, Tropicana at Dean Martin, and utility work on westbound Tropicana. That's at Mountain Vista.
Mr. President, it's time to get to work. Surely we both agree that the national debt is too high. Surely we both agree that inflation hurts American families. Surely we can trim waste and streamline programs to make them both stronger and more efficient. Congressional Republicans are ready to act to save our country and to make America stronger.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
So good to have you with us. Hour number 3 of Live and Local, and always happy to have him on. Scott Hammond, State Senator, District 18, and he joins us now from Carson City. Scott, it's getting busier and busier. Week 14 of the Nevada legislature. Give me your sense of where we are. We're some 4 weeks away from being able to end this session.
Hey, good to hear from you again. It's good to be on the program from the cold and dark north. But, you know, it's getting better. You know, it's funny because, again, as somebody who's terming out, this is my last term, I'm sitting back and I'm watching as the same sort of patterns unfold, right? It's got a sort of, circadian rhythm to it almost. Like, you just know what's happening next. Well, today we had one of the last, I think it was a subcommittee on K-12 funding. And as almost as if you just knew it was going to happen, today was the day that a lot of teachers came in. and just said, we need more money, right? That was the theme for the day, is we need more money. So it just seems like that's what happens every single session that I've been up here. There's a certain rhythm. We hear a bunch of bills. This is what we want, and accountability for teachers is what we want for this or that. And then, you know, then it's just, we need more money. We need more money. They always want, they keep telling me that what they're after is that we want to get to the national average on student spending, which means student spending, you know, if we're putting more money into student spending, or if we're putting more money into the, you know, the limits of the per pupil average, then that means that those raises for teachers, which, again, I don't begrudge paying teachers more. I don't. I really don't. And I hate spending time talking about teacher accountability. If you really want teacher accountability, get rid of all the artificial conversations about, hey, we do this and we ask for test results or we ask for that. Get away, just do away with that. Open up school choice, have the parents and the students decide where to go. And if they don't like where they go, they just use their feet and they go somewhere else. And that's school choice, and that's accountability your school will produce. I don't care if it's a public school or if it's a private school or a charter school or a micro school or whatever kind of school you're talking about. Then, you know, just allow students to decide whether or not they're going to come. If you are delivering to that student and you have a product that they want, they'll come. We can stop talking about all that, and then we can start talking about how to raise student or teacher salaries. Because now the teachers are saying, look, I've got a great product here. I am part of a school that's really doing well. Let's pay them more. And I don't care if that's public or private either. I really want to get to that discussion, but we never seem to have that discussion. You know, even in the public schools, I still think we should be having a discussion about one teacher being a much better teacher and delivering more and being, you know, and having more success with students and paying them more. And that's where I think we should be. But instead, we just heard today one teacher after another come up and say, just give us more money.
Now, is this in addition to the $2 billion that the governor is laying on them?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're already going to get a raise. And I don't know what the number is. I'm just going to be shooting out a number, and I could be wrong, but I think it's about a 14% raise already. So what they're coming in and saying is that they would like a 6% raise on top of that. And you know what will happen is, they'll come out of this session with a 14% raise and then tell everybody that they got a cut. you and I know that's the truth, though, right? I mean, it happens time and time again. You know, we give them money on top of what they had from the last budget. And then we're like, okay, well, we're going to adjust it. We can't give you $100,000, so we're going to go with $85,000. And then they go out there and tell everybody they got a cut of $15,000. But in fact, it's actually $85,000 on top of what they got last time.
Again, Scott Hammond joining us, State Senator, District 18. So where is this new money supposed to come from, this money over and above the $2 billion that the governor has promised?
Well, some of it is from the Economic Forum. The Economic Forum meets before the session begins, and then they meet again just before the session ends to kind of reevaluate and look at all the trends, look at all the numbers, and find out what we can expect in the coffers. And they gave a projection of, I think, about $250 million more coming in. And so you're going to see a lot of people scrambling and saying, hey, we got money for this pet project I've got, or this pet project needs to be, you know, funded. And so there's always that sort of, you know, last minute grab to try and figure out who's going to get that last little bit of money. So we have that money on top of it. And then, of course, that money that came in from, you know, the federal government, some of it we're going to use to bond out projects. And when you bond out, that means you've got other money that you're freeing up. The one thing that we, and I've said this before in your program, I'll continue to say it, the one thing we have to avoid is putting money into operational costs. Because then that requires us to maintain that level of funding, which means if we don't have the money, then we're talking about increasing some sort of revenue, which is taxation. We want to avoid that. We want to live within our means. And so we want to make sure that we're very cognizant of that. And I think that's, you know, I think both sides want to make sure we avoid that. We all want to, you know, balance our budget. And so it's just a matter of making sure we rein things in at the end, because everybody knows, they're cognizant of the fact that you don't want to go above, but they also really love the program that they've been pushing for the last 3 months. And so there's that big fight for the money at the end.
Give me a sense of where you see the governor's education bill. And I believe that's AB 400. Do we know where that is right now?
Yeah, it's they just had a hearing, and I think it was Ways and Means. And the I know it's weird, right? They had an education committee, or they had an education bill, and it was in Ways and Means. But that's where I think they had the hearing, and I think it's sitting there for a little bit. It's going to sit there for a while because that's the bill that he wants to get through, and that's the bill that the Democrats have to leverage some of the things that they want. Maybe even was it 404, which is Med-Mal. You know, they might be looking at medical malpractice, increasing the limits. Governor, and many of us do not like that. We want to keep our doctors in Nevada. I mean, we were personally, I was here when we had a crisis back in the early 2000s, and doctors were leaving one after another after another. You couldn't get a good doctor, especially if you pregnant females were having a hard time finding somebody that would help them deliver their baby. So, I mean, we did everything to try and keep our doctors here in Nevada, and this kind of messes around with it a little bit. So I think that might be used as leverage to get his bill out, 400. But we'll see. I think of all the things he's got out there, and I told you this last week, I hate to tell anybody, tip my hand, but in a way, I think that his education stuff might be the easiest stuff to get through.
AB 330 was the security for schools,
yeah.
And that and that's gone through, or where are we on that?
That is, I believe, coming over to the Senate. They got through. There's two bills on safety. The governor's 330, and then there was another one. I think it was either 295 or 395. And I really believe that one right there is there are several legislators. So the governor's got his bill, and there's several legislators, Democrats and Republicans, who are on that other bill. And I believe there are some overlapping issues in both of those bills. Not issues. I mean, they're just overlapping desires, if you will. And I think that both of those bills will be heard in Senate Education pretty soon. If not, probably next week, early next week, or by the end of next week. And just those two bills alone should be a very lengthy committee hearing, because we're going to hear from both sides. And I think that's where we'll be able to find out what we need to take out from each one, because they overlap, or where we need to, you know, maybe shore up something. But I hope that we can come to a compromise on both of those. I think that they're mutually exclusive in some areas, but where they overlap, we'll just kind of pull out, you know, some of the stuff from one of the bills or the other bill. But we should be able to get that stuff through.
So what's going on as of last week, late last week, early this week? We were looking at five bills having been signed by the governor. Is the pace picking up at all?
It is. I can't give you with any accuracy, but I think we're in the double digits now. We might be 13. And I was wrong. I'll be the first to admit it when I'm wrong. I was looking at a different number when I said 93. I think I told you that in 2019 it was like 93.
Yeah.
I went back and did the research. I went back all the way, I think, to 2017. And, you know, we are a little bit behind most of those from most of those sessions. But not by much, by six or seven. I didn't realize that. I guess we are always a little slow getting things to the governor. But this is, again, I wasn't wrong when I said we had fewer bills introduced. And I wasn't wrong when I said we had fewer bills that passed out in the first House passage. So we are down in those numbers, which that's not always a bad thing. You know, some people right now, some of your listeners are probably rejoicing. You know, fewer bills means fewer things that they have to try and fix later on. You know, but we are finally picking up. The governor's finally, signing some bills. We're seeing that picking up a little bit as well. We're passing bills out. We had a work session in education as well as commerce and labor on Monday. There's some other committees that had also work sessions. And just so your listeners understand, work session just means, you know, we heard the bill and then finally we said, all right, we want to get it out of committee. Let's work the bill. Are there any amendments? Do any members of this committee need to put any amendments on there before they feel comfortable to vote on it? And then when we work session a bill, that means we're getting it out of our committee and it goes back to the floor, or it goes to one of the money committees if need be, Ways and Means in the Assembly or Finance in the Senate. So that's kind of where we're at. But we're starting to see more of those bills passing out.
State Senator Scott Hammond joining us. 77% of Nevadans favor voter ID. That's from, believe it or not, a Nevada Independent poll. And yet Democrats are opposing voter ID. Can you give me a sense of is the voter ID bill still alive? Is it dead? And if it is, how can these legislators go back to their district when they know that 77% want this and yet they oppose it?
Yeah, so they're still alive. They haven't died. That bill in particular is still alive. I know that the Speaker of the Assembly, and I read so many things and then I move on to the next thing, right, before too long. And so, but I know that he had made some comments to Nevada Independent, something about being dead on arrival. I don't know if they're dead on arrival for sure. Like you said, what they're hoping is that as a society we have collective amnesia, we just forget about what was and what wasn't passed through. This is common sense legislation, right? Having some sort of ID when you come to the ballot box. I just think it's such an easy step to make in order to show people that every election is up on the up and up, right? It's legit. It's, we've checked your ID. We know who you are. You're a resident of the state. Go ahead and vote. I mean, I think it's a very easy step to take to ensure that the elections are legitimate, right? To give that much more legitimacy to every election and every election cycle. So I know they're not dead yet. There's going to be some negotiations at the end. I don't know how easy it's going to be to get this particular one. We will see. But I'm really, really excited that at least we're talking about it. I'm glad to see that so many people are on that side of, we're on the same side, that this is an easy step. And why shouldn't we do this to ensure that every election, not only for Republicans, one minute it's Republicans asking for it, and then 2, 3, 4 years later, it's Democrats asking for it. So it's not one of those things that's going to benefit one party or the other. It's just a common sense, smart thing to do.
Have you had access to the governor or Ben Kieckhefer, members of his staff, as to when and on what bills he might bring out the old veto pen?
Yeah, so I've talked to him, and many of our caucus members have had access to the chief of staff, Ben Kieckhefer, as well as the governor. We've had conversations. I kind of have an idea of what bills, but he's never really sat down and said, I'm definitely going to veto this one. About the only one we know is 184, and he made a declaration of sorts, right? He put out a press release. And he said, I'm going, if it comes to my desk, this is one that will not make it through. That's SB 184. And that was the bill presented by Senator Spearman that would have increased the number of folks on the city council in North Las Vegas, as well as a few other items that they, you would have had to live within the jurisdiction of North Las Vegas in order to actually work work for the city council. Just little things like that. The city council itself, the charter that created North Las Vegas, didn't want it. And that was what was in the veto, that was what was in the press release, that he was not going to pass any bills dealing with city charters that weren't actually brought by the city, the city people themselves.
It's going to be interesting to see how this final 4 weeks plays out. But you're confident that he will be vetoing the really bad bills?
Oh, yeah. I suspect he's going to veto several more before this is all over. The question is, when do they bring him the bills? That'll be the question. That'll be the thing that you need to look for. Like, are they going to wait and they're going to hold back a lot of these bills until, towards the end, which means I think it's 10 days. If he doesn't get them and then the end of session happens, and of course they come back the beginning of next session, and for a overturning of a veto, and he might have a supermajority in each house, he may not have, the Democrats may have a supermajority in each house, which means that they could overturn his vetoes. So that's always something to look forward to, kind of see what's going on there. There's little gamesmanship in that particular nuance. But the other thing I'm kind of looking forward to is, again, I told you there's a certain rhythm to all this. I'm wondering if they're going to be able to reconcile all the asks for the budget and if they're where the governor wants them, because the governor can, and it's happened in the past, the governor can veto his own budget, and that would force us into a special session where we have to look at nothing but whatever he wants on his agenda for that special session. So that's the other thing I'm kind of looking to see, if they can reconcile everything and then pass it out.
It's going to be a fascinating final 4 weeks. Scott, thank you so much. Always good. If folks want to reach out to you, if they have a constituent service issue that they'd like to address or they want to talk policy with you, how do they go about doing that?
Easy. I mean, I have an email account that you can use. But the fastest, best way is to text me or call me. And the phone number, for those of you listening, 702. It's a 702 number. It's 523-9055. Love that number because it's got all these fives in it, right? 523-9055.
Yeah.